your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
If you're a DC fan, you'll definitely want to check out the latest live-action series, Titans, available now on DC Universe. This series premiered on October 12th, and new episodes are available to stream every Friday. Titans is the first original series to launch on DC Universe, and it follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes. Like Robin, Batman's former sidekick, now trying to break free of his Robin alter ego. Raven, a guarded teenager who's starting to experience the emergence of supernatural power she just doesn't understand. Starfire, a mysterious alien warrior with exceptional powers, but her memory loss is preventing her from knowing her own identity and her mission on Earth. This group gets caught up in conspiracy to bring about hell on Earth, and they become a surrogate family and team of heroes. This is a gritty take on the Teen Titans franchise from executive producers Akiva Goldsman, Jeff Johns, Greg Berlanti, Greg Walker, Sarah Schechter, and John Fawcett. Titans explores one of the most popular comic book teams ever, and it's only available on DC Universe on all your favorite devices. DC Universe is only $7.99 a month or 20% off for a yearly membership. Join the ultimate DC membership at DCUniverse.com and check out Titans.
This week in Retronauts, we process the blasts. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Retronauts, not some other episode. You might be confused there, but no, it's this one. And this one is the one where we talk about Sega Genesis. It is now 30 years since Sega launched the Sega Genesis as the Mega Drive in Japan. How did that happen? I don't know, but we're still alive, and so we're going to talk about it. Now, this episode, I want this to be a bit of contrition because 10 years ago, that's how long this podcast has been running. 10 years ago, I put together a 20th anniversary episode for the Sega Genesis that was meant to be a celebration of the platform, but I didn't vet the participant list very carefully, and at least one person on the panel spent 2 hours talking about how much Sega sucks and how bad Sega Genesis is. And unfortunately, those of us gathered here in the room together are not like huge lifelong Sega fans, but I feel like we are going to make up for what happened last time because, by God, we are earnest, and also we brought in like 30 letters from people who love Sega Genesis. So they are going to do the heavy lifting for us. In the meantime, why don't you, my fellow flawed humans, introduce yourselves?
My name is Chris Sims, and I do what Nintendo don't.
My name is Ben Edwards, and I do what Chris doesn't do.
And what is that exactly? Oh, you drink gin. Okay.
I don't write comic books.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a lot of things Chris does you probably don't do.
That's true.
Yoga.
Anyway, I'm Jeremy Parrish. I don't think I said that before, but that's who I am, and that's what you're stuck with. So anyway, Sega Genesis, 30 years old. As of October 28th, 2018, I want to say.
Happy Halloween.
Yay. Maybe it's October 20th. In any case, it's October, and there is time for Sega Genesis. And was Klax ever on Genesis? I don't think it was. Oh, actually, yeah, it was. Klax was on Genesis, so there is time for Klax. Mm-hmm. Guys, tell me, what was your first Sega Genesis experience? What was the first impression it made on you?
I remember walking up to in Toys R Us, walking up or down the video game aisle and seeing a new demonstration console on the corner with these huge controllers. It looked so bulbous and black with three buttons. What's going on here? You know, three buttons. And playing Altered Beast on a demonstration console there, right when it was new, probably at launch time in America, which was 89, right?
That's correct, yes.
So, and a few
friends.
Want
to say August 89?
Sorry. Yeah, probably. I was 8 at that time, and my friends, some friends had it, and a later memory is that one of my best friends in my neighborhood when I was little had a Sega Genesis, and we played Sonic 2 on it, and we didn't have a second controller, and we figured out that if I took one of my Atari controllers over and plugged it into the second port, that I could play as Tails, because there's only one button needed to jump, and that was a cool memory. I got others, but Chris, what about you?
I had a weird class hatred for Sega Genesis. I've told this story on podcast before. I don't know if I've talked about it. Astronauts. But when I was a kid, I somehow got it into my head, and I'm talking about like 9, 10 years old, that Genesis was for the rich. It was for rich kids, and Super Nintendo was for the hardworking, salt of the earth, blue collar, good Americans like me. And TurboGrafx was for my friend Matthew, who had one and he was weird. So, yeah. So I had this, the Sega Genesis. I think I said this to Jeremy the other day. It had the same kind of appeal to me as like getting a dessert with flakes of gold on it, where I'm like, that is ridiculous, but I do want to try it. Cause it was a system that for me, other people had, and it was a system that I was always seeing advertised, cause they advertised heavily in comics. And, you know, they had so many games that I just, you know, that didn't seem like they were across platforms. Like, they had so many games I was never going to play. Like, I was a huge fan of DuckTales for NES, but I was never going to play Quackshot, because that was on the Genesis. I only ever got to play, like, Sonic when I was over at my sister's boyfriend's house. So Genesis had this weird amount of allure for me. The Genesis in general, and, like, Sonic as a character, because I would, like, 92, 93 would be around the time that, you know, the Sonic comics were starting, and I would get those from the grocery store and feel like this guy isn't Mario, this guy's cool, but my loyalties are with Mario. So it wasn't until I was an adult that I really got to sit down with Sega Genesis stuff, and I still had this weird, like it's for rich people. I don't get it. It's for the rich.
The Genesis has been a weird thing, because I approached it from the NES being my base console at the time, and Super Mario Brothers being sort of the de facto awesome platformer. And so when I played Sonic and everybody said it was awesome, I was really disappointed in Sonic. It was like, what is this? He's supposed to run fast, but every time you run fast, you get hit or you run into things and stop. And then, you know, and you jump around and whatever. I didn't understand it, you know, but
if you didn't do anything, he would tap his foot and look at you
and then leave. So cool. And then he would quit. He would be like, I'm out of here later.
So I thought for years and years, I thought, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog was vastly overrated, but I can appreciate it much more now. I think, from a different perspective. I don't know.
Yeah. I think the design of Sonic and a lot of games gets to something that Chris and I were talking about before we started recording, which is that Sega is an arcade company. They are very much an arcade company at heart, and Genesis games really reflected that. So they tended to be very difficult. They tended to be very fast-paced, action-oriented, and they tended to rely heavily on the need to replay them and to really kind of learn what you do everywhere. And Sonic, you know, it has really great branching level design where you can go different areas and find stuff. But it really is about kind of like finding your optimal route and learning like, well, I'm going really fast, but I need to jump now, because if I don't, then I'm going to hit a stopper and go the wrong direction. Uh-huh. Or I will run into like a chameleon that pops out of nowhere and shoots at me. So there is an element of that sort of arcade memorization to that. And I feel like, you know, Genesis does a good job of bridging the divide between console design and arcade design, which was the point. I mean, when Sega put together the Genesis, they built it around the same basic spec as their current arcade boards. They were, you know, we've talked about the arcade history of Sega. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, the system debuted in 1988. So at the time, the System 16 board was the big thing. And the System 16 board was built around the Motorola 68000 processor architecture. That's exactly the architecture they used for Genesis. Their previous system had been, you know, Master System running on a Z80. So it's a different kind of system, a different architecture. But they switched over to something that would be very compatible with their arcade hardware, if considerably less powerful, which was a problem kind of in the early going. But I really think that speaks to the mentality that they brought to their home console design. And I feel like it's a big part of what made Genesis so successful because, you know, you had a console here in 1988, 89, that was running on a chip almost exactly the same as a Mac Plus, which was a very expensive computer, a very powerful graphically oriented computer. They were using it for a completely different kind of application, but I feel like it does kind of speak to the seriousness with which they approach this. In Japan, you also had the Sharp X68000 computer, which launched a few years later. And that, you know, based on the name alone, ran on the same architecture and was basically like a perfect arcade system. If you play, oh man, I played an X68000 at Portland or at Long Island Retro Expo a couple of months ago, played like Strider and other Capcom games are arcade perfect on that system because that was what Capcom used as their development system. But I also played Super Hang-On, and it was the most intense racing experience I've ever had. It was this 16-bit, you know, arcade game on a home computer, but, you know, with the thruster kind of control system and the joystick, like, it's just so fast and so amazing and so intense. And I want to own that computer just to play that game and have that experience again, even though that would cost me,
yeah, me too,
$4,000.
Yeah, and I wish I could get into Japanese computers like that. I've wanted to for so long.
Just got to win the lottery, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that speaks to something that we're going to talk about that Genesis collection in a little bit. And when I got it, I literally just played through it A to Z. And one of the things I was shocked by, I'm not bad at video games, I don't think. I've got an NES Classic and an SNES Classic, so I've been playing a lot of like older stuff lately. But I was shocked at how difficult all the Genesis stuff was. It is like I when I got here, the first thing I asked you was, "Hey, is the Genesis just more difficult?" And I think you can see that in Sonic. Like, Sonic is a beautiful game. It's very pretty. Like graphically, I think it genuinely looks better than even like Mario World in a lot of ways. And it feels good. Like when Sonic goes fast and when he goes over the loops and slows down just a little, it feels so good. But that is a game where going fast is not the advantageous thing to do. And I find that very frustrating.
You got to know when to use the speed and when not to. It's like the Gambler, the Kenny Rogers of action heroes.
Sonic is the Kenny Rogers of video games.
Yeah, he absolutely is. Yeah, the arcade vibe that Genesis had was ultimately why I didn't buy the system for myself. I didn't talk about my first experiences with the system, but I had a few, and they involved like renting the system or borrowing it from friends. Like, I had a friend who lived a few blocks away who I went to church with, and he would lend me his Genesis occasionally, and I'd lend him my NES or whatever. And he came back, and he'd always be like, "These games are stupid. I don't care about NES games. They're so slow." Whereas I'd be like, "Man, this system's really cool, but where are the kind of games that I want? I want some games that are slower and deeper." Mm-hmm. And, you know, I loved playing. Oh, my God. I borrowed Strider from him, and it was it wasn't arcade perfect, but it sure felt like it. And, you know, compared to the NES version of Strider, I was like, this is, you know, night and day, man. This Genesis is amazing. But, you know, then I would, I think I had some friends rented a Genesis and Star Control and Ghouls and Ghosts. And I was like, oh man, the Star Control game seems really cool, but they just wanted to play Ghouls and Ghosts because it was like, wow, it's just like the arcade. So there was kind of a disconnect between what that system was and what I wanted from it. So I ultimately went with a Super NES because it had the Mario games and the Mega Man games and the Castlevania games and the RPGs and the action RPGs that I really liked. And those just weren't as prevalent and easy to come by on Genesis. But at the same time, I never looked at Genesis and was like, yeah, this system seems stupid and bad and I don't want it. It was always to me like this thing that I wish, you know, I had it in my budget that I could also afford this system, but I only have so much money. So I got to stick with, you know, one and go with the thing that is the experience that I want. But yeah, my experience with Genesis was always sort of like on the outside looking in and longing for something more.
Also, I feel like, to your point, like us coming from a Nintendo perspective, when I, in later years, as I've been looking back and trying to find things about the Genesis library games that I enjoy, I realized that I was sort of just looking for games that are sort of like NES games, that are more less arcadey, like beat 'em ups where you die and you insert quarters, more like Landstalker or Beyond Oasis or something that's, you know, just have more depth and more adventure and more like you're just kind of chilling and you're doing what you want to do.
And there was stuff like that. Yeah, there was stuff like Sword of Vermillion, but Sega didn't really push it that hard.
They weren't the showcases of that system at the time.
They were like, look, EA Sports. Well, I don't want to play a sports video game.
Yeah, I didn't like sports games, so that ruled that out.
So Sega's marketing was very successful, except to me, because it wasn't communicating that, yes, this console also has the things that you like, Jeremy. So I missed out on it for a long time, and I'm really enjoying opportunities to go back and discover Sega's library. I've been playing the Switch Sega Ages. And just yesterday I was playing Thunder Force 4 for the first time, like Lightning Force, and it's a really great shooter. Like, I wouldn't buy a console for that, but I'm really appreciating the opportunity that I have to go back and kind of discover the Genesis, you know, years later, and find all these games that I've heard about, or maybe that I haven't heard about, you know, that are out there that just need to be discovered. So there is kind of this appeal in the Genesis for me now, and like, hey, it's this treasure trove of things that either I've heard about by reputation or that no one ever talks about and that I'm going to discover on my own, which I like.
There are tons of deep cuts on this platform that are really good.
Hastings, who did the Adventures of Dr. McNinja webcomic and wrote Gwenpool for Marvel, once wrote in Dr. McNinja that, like, as a kid, he thought that only a genie could allow a child to own both a Super Nintendo and a Sega Genesis. And I feel like there was that hard dividing line. Like, the advertising was so competitive, you know, like, there was an entire magazine just for Nintendo stuff. Like, like, if you were a Nintendo kid, I feel like you were a Nintendo kid. And the Genesis was something
other. They had Mega Play. Come on.
Okay. But I feel like the games bear that out. Like, there's a different style of games. And I find that really interesting to go back and look at.
All right. So I said that we were going to talk, or we were going to incorporate listener mail into this for people's positive experienced opinions that we can't offer. And we're going to do that now. We're going to break from format, and we're going to have the mailbag here at the top of the show.
We get letters and written letters in the mail. We're going to read them to you now.
So, from Jack. Sega Channel is the first thing that comes to mind. Keeping with the ancient Sega tradition, it was a cool idea that was too expensive and poorly timed, but to an 8-year-old it was magic. So the Sega Channel was an online download-based service where you could, you know, subscribe and play games that were broadcast over TV, and that's pretty ahead of its time. So he says, with 50 games available at a time to download and play on demand, my friends and I were able to bypass the normal limitations for playing new games. I have fond memories of playing Pulse Man, Mega Man the Wily Wars, and Alien Soldier, all of which were available in the US only through this service. On the other end of the spectrum, my friends and I enjoyed some of the worst games, such as the semi 3D fighter disaster piece Balls. Had we been unfortunate enough to blow a weekend rental or, God forbid, purchase that game, we would have been devastated. But with Sega Channel, we had a laugh for 20 minutes playing it before resetting the system and diving into another playthrough of Gunstar Heroes. We would also stay up until midnight on the day the rotation would change, eagerly awaiting the new games that we would have access to. There was even a section for beta versions of games years ahead of demo discs. And just reading this makes me so jealous that I didn't have that experience. I'm really envious. That sounds amazing.
I wanted the Sega Channel so bad when it was out, but they didn't offer it in my area. Otherwise, I would have bought a Genesis just for that at the time.
Man, North Hills really was a hellhole.
I didn't live in North Hills.
Oh, okay.
Negascot128 says, can anyone say anything about Gunstar Heroes that hasn't been said already? Tight controls, a great dual weapon mechanic, fantastic bosses, and it's all over before it can outstay its welcome. It's easily one of the best shooter games ever made, and rightly cemented Treasure as one of the best developers of the era. Agreed, actually.
Disagree.
Disagree.
No, I think Gunstar Heroes is overrated. But it's a great game.
I used to think that, and I used to think Treasure was overrated, and I've come around.
Yeah. It's a matter of taste. But it's definitely a very good game. I'll give you that.
They're super technical, which took me a long time to warm up to, but they're kind of amazing.
I mean, we'll get to it, but Gunstar Heroes is, out of all the games on that Genesis collection, like, that is my number one pick.
I'm surprised that you liked that game.
It's a blast. I love everything about it. I love the aesthetic. I think the characters are well designed. I think the weapons are fun.
I love how every stage is just totally different than the last.
Yeah.
Like, they just had all these ideas. I mean, you can really tell that was kind of their breakout game, their first project as a team, because it's like all the stuff they wanted to do when they worked at Konami but couldn't do. They're like, put it all in there. Yeah. We're going to have a boss that has 7 different forms and changes as you fight him. And then we're going to have a stage where you roll dice and play a board game to beat the boss.
Yeah, it's bananas. And it feels like the next evolution of Contra should have been. You know, mm-hmm. Coming from ex-Konami employees makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, they probably bailed on Konami because they were like, oh, hardcore? Yeah, that's okay, but look what we can do instead. Yeah.
And also, it has that feeling of Sonic, the speed of Sonic, because not only is it a fast-moving game, but, your weapon is, moves super fast. It feels, frantic in a way that, is almost like bullet hell, but also has platform elements. It's a really good game. I really like it.
Brilliant.
It's like your gun is an extension of yourself. You just point it where you want to kill things and it goes all over the place.
And it even gives you the choice of how you want to play. You can play as one character who does the run and gun thing, and you can play as one character who plants his feet and takes aim and is stationary when he attacks.
Yeah.
So it's really the customization and adaptability of that game, it takes some getting used to, but once you get the handle of it, you're like, oh, yes, this is good.
Yeah, I'll play it some more then.
I don't know why that game didn't spark a massive franchise. Yeah,
it's ironic that I said it was overrated because it was not when it was new.
Right.
Nobody in America that I knew of had ever heard of that game.
It even came with a fruit roll-up. Come on, how can that not appeal to you? My God. Are you made of stone?
I got this thing downloaded from the PlayStation Store. Are they going to mail me one?
Sorry, that was a Genesis exclusive.
They were
doing what Nintendo don't.
Mega roll-up.
I mean, Nintendo gave you a coupon for Pizza Hut mini pizza, but did you get a fruit roll-up in the box? I don't think so.
Look, there was no Genesis cereal system, that's for sure.
Benj, what's up on your mail roster?
Fastest cereal in the world. Okay, the next one is Mute Kai. I don't know. While I own multiple old consoles, the Genesis is probably the one that I'm least likely to ever get rid of. The folks on HG101, Hardcore Gaming 101, already know this due to the fact that it's my system of choice for the podcast and video music I've done for the site. But I'm a huge fan of the YM2612 sound hardware, and its specific way of mixing audio is almost impossible to get right in emulation. I'd certainly think of my work on the system as being the least demo scene adjacent, in that I enjoy finding ways to make strange and weird sounds that aren't as thought of as coming from the system. Even if I didn't, though, the Yamaha chip in the Genesis is a surprisingly strong chip and is almost as good as the DX7 synth, which was, I think I have one of those, which was used in it's an FM synthesizer thing, mm-hmm. which that was used in a wide range of 80s production, from thumping bass sounds to tinkling electric pianos. It's some very elaborate sound hardware considering, and for consumer grade stuff, certainly beats the pants off the Adlib chips on PCs at the time. In most respects, even if many Japanese computers had synth chips more in line with it. Now,
so who was that from?
Mute KI. That's the name, but
Muteki,
maybe Muteki. The Genesis FM. I have a love hate relationship with that. Obviously, I don't know if you remember the joke I made on our first or second podcast about the Genesis.
Oh, I'm still getting hate mail about it.
Yeah, so I'm not even going to repeat it on this. But FM synthesis, I always found grating and not as, I guess compared to say the I think. the sound table, wave table sort of stuff on the Super NES was, I found that was superior. But, you know, the if you think about what he's actually saying here, though, having a DX7 type technology in 1988 on a console is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was like arcade hardware caliber audio hardware in a console. It was pretty amazing.
Lots of versatility there. So it's
I thought I was going to be the contrarian today, Bench, but it's all you.
It's okay. I still love the Genesis. I mean, it's just it has its quirks, you know.
All right. Well, here's a letter from Matt. There wasn't a whole lot to do during the summer for an 11-year-old suburbanite with no money, so I spent my days the best way I could imagine, finishing Sonic 3 on every save file the game offered. Sonic 3 wasn't my favorite Genesis game, but I'd already played Streets of Rage 2, Moonwalker, and Castlevania Bloodlines to death. Sonic 3 had some fun secrets to discover in a snappy, oddly familiar soundtrack. And best of all, I had a copy on hand and ready to go. Outside, the pavement radiated heat, and we didn't have air conditioning. So as Sonic splashed through Hydro City, I swam in a pool of my own sweat. But as the day wore on, black clouds overtook the sunny sky. I paused the game and watched as the heavens burst. Rain cascaded down my streets as relief came in the form of an earthy scent and cool breeze. It was one of those moments that defined the joy of childhood for me. Back then, there was magic in a video game controller and a hot day and an unexpected storm.
I feel like I was there.
You mentioned Bloodlines, and real quick, I think that's legit the most underrated Castlevania.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I wrote a column for Polygon earlier this year saying, what the hell, Konami? Where is this game? Why have you not reissued it? It wasn't even on Virtual Console.
I agree. I've been building Genesis joysticks recently, and that's the game I use to test them all out because it just kicks ass.
I mean, I sure do hate playing platformers like Castlevania on a joystick, but hey, if it works for you...
It's good. The joystick is so good.
No, I'm not disparaging your joysticks, which are awesome. I just hate the experience of playing platformers.
But I know, but that's... I do too. I hate playing them on a joystick, but this is so good. I like it. That's the problem. It makes everything good.
This was an ad for Bloodlines, and now it's an ad for your joysticks.
Yeah, BX95, buy it today.
If Bloodlines didn't have, like, the graphics weren't quite as, clashy as they are, because they do have, there are some, like, the Tower of Pisa scene is pretty eye-searing, but, like, gameplay-wise, and, like, for the most part, like, the world-traveling aspect, Bloodlines rules. And people don't think of it when
it's a great classic take on Castlevania. Yeah. Maybe the last good, like, classic style Castlevania. I mean, the Castlevania Rebirth was okay, but it didn't compare to Bloodlines.
Yeah,
it's a great last hurrah.
Natalie Kosuge says, I didn't actually own a Genesis when it was current. A friend of mine got one, so I decided to get a TurboGrafx-16 instead and play Genesis games at his house. However, I did grow up near the Genesis store mentioned in the book Console Wars that Sega opened near Walmart's corporate headquarters in Arkansas.
Wow.
Fun fact, Console Wars misidentifies the store as being in Bentonville. It was actually in Fayetteville. What's more, my cousin's best friend had worked there, and I had no problem cracking open any game I wanted to play on one of the demo units. I still fondly remember the Friday when I went in after school, let out, and camped out with a copy of Hellfire until closing time. I don't know how much money that store made for Sega, but it made great free arcade arcade for my parasitic 12-year-old self.
Connection. Like, my nephews love that sometimes I get Pokemon games early. And when I was a kid, I had an aunt who worked at Best Products, if you remember that.
Yeah.
And she worked in the warehouse.
I remember that.
So when games came out, she was like, yoink. Not only did she get them right away without having to, you know, fight with other consumers, she also got them at a 20% discount.
That is awesome.
You think
that's
good? Yeah. My uncle worked at Nintendo, and he told me how I could get Mew. Wow. I just need to move the truck.
Oh, yeah? That's awesome.
Also, he's already played Mario 5.
Damn.
Jeremy, you missed one that says, damn it, Jeremy, you always set such tight deadlines. How am I meant to send you my handwritten letter in the mail? Which is obviously a reference to the greatest theme song of all time. Okay. Zachary Walton says, I never had anything Sega growing up as I was a Nintendo kid, but my friend had a Genesis. We never had a rivalry or ribbed each other for choosing Nintendo over Sega or vice versa. We simply enjoyed going to each other's houses to play the games we couldn't play in our own respective homes. Wow, this nonpartisanship is sorely needed today.
It's the healing this nation needs.
Yeah, we need that right now. That being said, I was always jealous that the Genesis had the Streets of Rage trilogy. They are still, to this day, my favorite beat-em-ups, and my copy of Final Fight, despite being excellent, always just sort of felt flat compared to the vibrant colors and music of Sega that Sega's Brawler offered. The only downside to all this is that my friend got a little tired of me wanting to play Streets of Rage 2 again when he had other games like Sonic 3 and Gunstar Heroes that he wanted me to try out as well. Sorry, Jesse, Streets of Rage 2 is just the better game.
I love Streets of Rage.
All right, from Eric. Now here's one we can relate to. I never owned a Genesis, but my best friend did. My favorite memory is my first, seeing the enormous sprites in Altered Beast for the first time. The game is lousy, as I can now see, but I'd never seen anything like that outside an arcade. This was before I'd seen Mario. Remember how amazing those huge bullet bills were the first time you saw them? The first time I saw Altered Beast was, at the time, more mind-blowing than that. Just the idea that you could have those kinds of graphics without having to drop a quarter per play. Ultimately, I think the Genesis was too arcadey for my taste, but for those first few minutes, man, that blew my mind. Curation of Genesis titles is rather wanting, though, isn't it? I've always wanted to play Castlevania Bloodlines and Aladdin, but without the original hardware, I have nowhere to turn. I have to play Strider, my favorite Genesis game, using Wii Virtual Console, which right now means using the Wii Shell on my not-yet-defunct Wii U. Hopefully, the Mii fixes some of this, but I have a feeling I'm going to be left waiting on Bloodlines and Aladdin.
Matt M. writes in to say, I was pretty late to the Genesis era by way of the Sega CD bundle, so my earliest experiences revolve around cheesy but fun FMV games like Sewer Shark and Ground Zero Texas. I suppose my favorite memory would be opening the console on Christmas morning and popping in The Amazing Spider-Man vs. the Kingpin with my cousin and being totally blown away by the incredible cutscenes and graphics, even if I never really figured out how to properly play the game. But that first experience of feeling like I was playing a real comic book has rarely been topped over the years.
And the next one comes from Darth Obvious, which is my favorite Sith Lord.
Have you heard the legend of Darth Obvious the Blatant?
No.
Not from a Jedi.
Although I was firmly on Nintendo's side in the 16-bit wars, I always recognized that Sega had great games too. My favorite was Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Plus Knuckles. As someone who didn't own a Genesis and only got to play bits and pieces when I would trade consoles with a friend, I didn't get burned out on Sonic or even question having to rent two games to get the whole thing. Sonic 3 and Knuckles always represented to me the best graphics and sound the Genesis could offer, and it always could stand up to Super NES games, even Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, those fighting words.
Oh. Am I alone in being the one who doesn't like Donkey Kong Country?
No, actually, it has kind of a bad reputation on Retronauts, and actually that's something we take as much heat for as our Genesis opinions.
I think it's a highly overrated platformer, yeah.
I got halfway through and was like, I'd rather play Final Fantasy 3 again.
Yeah.
There you go. That was 1994 for me. From Daniel Lewis, my favorite memory of the Genesis goes hand in hand with my favorite game, Locked in the Time of the Not-So-Distant Summer of 1998. Dude, that's 20 years ago. I hate to tell you. Small Soldiers was the banger of that summer, being cross-promoted at Burger King with their Rodeo Burger, fuel that would almost single-handedly propel my then 12-year-old body through the summer, playing a recently borrowed but 4-year-old hidden gem, Dynamite Heady. The fun, frenetic gameplay with the many different head-switching power-ups, the whimsical puppet world with excellent environmental detail, the astonishing soundtrack with wide genre representation. Dynamite Heady had it all, and then some. I've never beaten it, because Twin Freaks gets me to this day, but I remember vividly staying up till all hours of the night, trying again, and never regretting the mini-game overs I would rack up over the years.
Blarg says, I was Nintendo fanboy through and through in the 90s, but occasionally got to play Genesis when my cousins weren't playing Madden to death. I loved the Sonic the Hedgehog games, but Gunstar Heroes was an absolute masterpiece. The game's unique combination of hand-to-hand combat, run-and-gun gameplay, and general wackiness hasn't been surpassed all these years later, not even by the serviceable GBA sequel/remake.
Wow, there are a lot of these.
Yep. Lots of people got to balance out our bad Genesis opinions.
Good things, yeah.
Go on, Binge.
Norm writes, There are some really interesting and memorable titles that have not really been spoken about yet on Retronauts or many other podcasts like Target Earth, Poltergeist, and General Chaos. Speaking of those three specifically, although they were not perfect, they offered an unforgettable experience through their uniqueness in gameplay and or mechanics. Target Earth, Poltergeist, and General Chaos. I've played Poltergeist. I don't remember Target Earth and General Chaos.
Target Earth, I think, is a messiah game in the Assault Suits Lanos genre. So you're like a big stompy mech, kind of like Sabernator on Super NES.
How about that?
So I think, don't quote me on that.
Some deep cuts here. It's also worth noting lesser-known RPG titles such as Sorcerer's Kingdom, Trazia, and Crusader of Senti, or action games like Valis 3, how do you pronounce that?
Valis sure.
3, Burning Force, and Gaiariz.
Gaiarus. It's in the advertisement. Look at his t-shirt. It's pronounced Gaiarus.
Actually pronounced Ease.
Ease. Wise.
What about the apostrophe?
Gyrus. Sounds like a disease. The Genesis had a large library of exciting games that pushed the system probably past its limits. Hard driving and steel talons, I'm looking at you. Of course, we all know the system sellers like Streets of Rage, Madden, etc., but there were plenty more entries that helped keep the Genesis pulse steady.
All right, let's keep going with the good times. From Utopia Nemo, my Genesis memory begins with a magazine. The EGM 1989-90 Video Game Buyer's Guide. Already a diehard Sega fan with a Super Master System, I had an awareness that the Genesis was on the horizon. But at age 12, when I walked into that KB Toys and saw that magazine, my life changed. It featured the Genesis, and I loved everything I saw. Its sleek, rounded, yet aggressive console and controller design, and its beautiful games with their massive and colorful sprites. I particularly remember the pictures of the Super Shinobi, which solidified to me that the Genesis was the continuation and advancement of everything I loved about Sega. Though I lobbied like a champ, I wasn't surprised at Christmas when I didn't score a Genesis. Its hefty $189.99 price tag was just too expensive for our family. But I was undeterred. I saved up every penny, I did extra chores, I washed cars, I pilfered spare change whenever I thought it wouldn't be noticed. 9 months later, I earned enough to buy myself a Genesis, the only console to encourage skullduggery. Walking into the store and confidently summoning the hired help to fetch my system, I could barely contain my excitement. It was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Fraser says, Genesis made up the majority of my childhood and still my favorite console to this day. I have so many great memories of these games, but for the sake of keeping it short, I'll stick with Shining Force 1 and 2. Back in the day, my brother and I would rent this game every weekend. The battles were fun, there were a ton of secrets, and we were surprised that for all the times we rented it, only once did our data get erased, luckily early on. There is so much charm to these games, from the music, art, characters, and that chess battle from 2 is still our favorite. I really enjoyed the Game Boy Advance remake of Shining Force 1 and was ecstatic about the revival of the series on PS2. Unfortunately, those games were meh at the very best, and every new Shining series announcement has been met with major disappointment. Maybe one day, but at least I can still go back to these great classics.
And finally, is this the last one? I don't know. Endymion 95.
Endymion.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Okay. It is.
Endymion 95. Says, I got my Genesis used in high school from a friend who was bailing for a Super NES right around the time Sonic the Hedgehog came out, and it was fine. But the greatest thing about the system was the social aspect. Suddenly, my friends wanted to come to my house. Nintendo was cool, but it was everywhere. You had to know that one kid with a Genesis to go visit and try it out. And maybe I was just naive enough to get taken advantage of, or maybe the games we played were more conducive to cooperation. Genesis had so many two-player brawlers and fighters. In particular, it was a huge draw for my friends when Genesis got the bloody version of Mortal Kombat and Super NES owners had to settle for sweat. And yeah, it was fun to go to their houses to get a solid Street Fighter II experience, but more often than not, we ended up cheesing something like Eternal Champions at my house. I still have my Genesis and busted it out for a 90s theme party recently. And guess what my nephew picked to play first? Hell yeah, Streets of Rage 2, just like old times.
Here's one from France, I'm assuming, based on the text from Bastien. I could tell you about the first game I played on the Mega Drive, Streets of Rage, or how my dad told me he could have helped me pay for an Amiga after I bought a secondhand Mega Drive and Strider with my pocket money, another bullet dodged. Instead, I'll concentrate on two tidbits. When I sold my Mega Drive, it didn't work so well. That might be because my brother and I slammed the cartridges into the port like the punk from the Sega C+4K3 adverts. Sorry about my pronunciation of French. Sega France had a train stocked to the brim with consoles and games come to 23 separate cities. The contest was Sonic on the Mega Drive, and while queuing, you could see the highest scores being updated. My neighbors in the queue were confident of being able to beat the score, and so was I. Little did we know that the high score contest was on Labyrinth Zone. I still have my sticker, though. In case you're wondering, Labyrinth Zone is a very slow and difficult section of the game, as opposed to, like, Green Hills Zone.
Okay.
This one comes from Paul, STR337. Reading forums and listening to podcasts today where Nintendo reigns supreme, it's like I grew up in an alternate reality. In the UK, where I'm from, Sega spotted a gap in the market and the Mega Drive was number one for much of the early 90s. All my friends had a Mega Drive and we'd spend countless hours at each other's houses playing games together like Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, and Micro Machines. My best Mega Drive memory harkens back to the Speedy Blue Hedgehog. Arguably Sonic's best game for 23 years until the recent release of Sonic Mania, Sonic 3 and Knuckles was the best Sonic had ever been. Unfortunately, to play the full version of the game, there was a wait of 7 months from March to October 1994, as Sega split it into two parts. My friends and I had played Sonic 3 more times than we could count, and I was the first of our group to get Sonic and Knuckles. I remember my friends and family crowding around the TV in my parents' kitchen cheering me on as I tackled the game's final stage, the Death Egg Zone. Gaming has rarely felt so good since.
Wow. Here's a cool one from Andy Lennon. I like this. In the early 90s, my high school band would convene at our drummer's garage every day after school to run through our blinkered repertoire of Slayer covers in the pastel wastes of suburbia.
Very evocative.
Yeah, we were getting pretty good, too, until one day he came home with a secondhand Sega Mega Drive. We went from rehearsing for 3 hours daily to rehearsing for about 30 minutes tops before we busted out Streets of Rage or Fatal Fury. Then when Street Fighter Champion Edition, Special Champion Edition, and Micro Machines appeared, forget about it. We were hooked, and the calluses moved steadily from our fingers to our thumbs, which are also fingers, technically, right? Good times, great classic hits.
Okay, there's actually a ton of listener mail here, and this is not just a listener mail episode. Yeah. So I think we're going to call it quits after this, but thank you to everyone who wrote in. I wish we had time to read all of these, but these guys have to drive home and they want to avoid rush hour traffic. So we're going to have to skip a lot of this, but I'm very grateful for everyone who wrote in. Finally, from Javier, love for the dungeon crawlers. My best memory is for Shining in the Darkness. This game paved the way for all the Shining Force games. It also gave me all the tools I need to love and understand games such as Etrian Odyssey. This game allowed you to min-max your party. You needed to map your way in the dungeon to get all the shortcuts right. It's not as forgiving as Shining Force. It's a hard game where you could easily end up in circles fighting nasty monsters. You encounter Dark Soul as the main guy. The menu options are a mainstay as well as many items. The basic party formation teaches you the basics for other RPGs. You are the fighter that uses swords and equips armors. You have a healer, very weak with weapons, but great at using items, and a powerful wizard that uses all kinds of magical items and spells, both extremely powerful by the end of the game. So basically just kind of a rundown of Shining in the Darkness, but it is a good game that's been largely overlooked. Actually, one final message here from Diego Trujillo. I think I pronounced that wrong. Ghouls and Ghosts, the first game I ever played on a Sega Genesis, hooked me instantly. I was shocked at the fidelity of the conversion and immediately started scheming on how I would buy a Genesis of my own. The only thing I loved more than my NES were the arcades, and the idea that I could have a piece of it for my very own was the most exciting moment in my long history of gaming. I ended up trading in all of my self-bought NES games to buy the Genesis and the game. The next few months were very painful, as being only 15, I didn't yet have a job to get my library going. It didn't take me long to rectify my employment situation. I just couldn't bank on gifts to fuel my new passion. I love my Genesis game, Days. Cutting the hanger tag off the boxes was a ritual. Mastering arcade favorites a passion, and it's still a favorite. So with that, we will wrap up the listener mail section, but hopefully this has been a great cross-section of people who love Sega Genesis and can speak to it with more personal experience and authority than we can. Although, I think we're willing to give it a fair shake here.
I think I noticed a theme, which is that most people love Streets of Rage.
Streets of Rage is very good. In fact, we will get to that. Sega Genesis launched in Japan as Mega Drive. It was also Mega Drive in Europe. So let's look back at the launch of the Sega Genesis, the Mega Drive, in 1988. What awareness did you guys have of Sega in the year 1988-89 when Genesis launched?
I was six, so nothing. I had an NES at the time, but like as far as I was concerned, that was video games.
I knew about the Sega Master System and Toys R Us and that all the boxes were white with blue. I think they're blue cross lines, like a grid on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted a Master System just because I wanted to experience everything, but I didn't get one until maybe the early 90s. And so I came at the Genesis from arcade experiences. So when I saw Altered Beast, I wanted to play that on the Genesis. That was where I came from.
Yeah, my awareness of Sega was it was the console that my friend down the block owned. He had a Master System and would always talk trash about the NES games that I owned and how much better his snail game was than mine. He had a maze with a snail.
In ROM.
Wow. Yeah.
I find those boxes to be fascinatingly
bad. I love that aesthetic. I love it so much. Unironically, I think it's amazing.
At the time, I thought it was really damn cool.
I don't know how you get to the point where you're like, yes, this is what we should show to the public.
I don't know.
I'm not even saying they're bad. I have to say,
you've probably never seen a Sega Master System store display.
Yeah, a wall of them.
Where you have like a wall of those games. Yeah. It creates an impression. It's like, this is all part of a unit. Like these all mm-hmm. belong together. And it makes sense.
Cohesive. I remember like, the wall thing.
Yeah, so like the pro wrestling art where it's like a guy holding his own head in a hammer lock, that's stupid. It's terrible. But when you see that with like three dozen other Master System games, it all kind of fits together. And it doesn't, like the individual mediocrity of the specific images isn't so bad because you have the grid, you have, you know, the Times New Roman typeface. It's all very
very mid-80s.
Yeah, it was very much of the era, and it all it seemed very fresh and modern, and it was much more consistent than NES or Atari.
It's like a Monet, where you see it from a distance and it's so intriguing, and then you get up close and there's a dude headlocking his own head.
Right.
That's exactly what Monet is.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Ferris Bueller where he's looking at the Seurat painting.
So the entire
you get closer and closer, you're like, whoa, guy with his own head, what?
So the entire Master System library is like a monolith to be taken as a whole, and then used.
I would love to see it like that.
Anyway, I'm
just old enough to remember that.
I remember the wall of games and Toys R Us, all and the impressive uniformity of it all. And I also remember that they had 3D glasses, which I wanted really bad at the time. The LCD shutter glasses.
Yep.
I have now. I wish I had them then.
Video game box art in the 80s is the Wild West.
It really was. But Sega Genesis really felt like, you know, taking that and saying, let's make it great. And so it was a big step forward in terms of design. But at the same time, like, Sega was definitely operating from a position of weakness. The Master System had fared poorly in the US, and its equivalent, the Mark III, had fared poorly in Japan, actually much worse in Japan. Nintendo had almost those entire console markets locked down. Like, Master System did okay for itself in Brazil, and in some parts of Europe, but those were not major markets. The two big driving markets were the US and Japan, and Master System was nothing there. So Sega was basically coming from nowhere. And on top of that, because Nintendo had been so successful, they managed to work on all these contracts with third parties where they pretty much had third parties like Konami, Capcom, Data East locked down. So they kind of had this rule where if you wanted to put a game on NES, you couldn't publish that same game on another system, which is why you got like these weird, unique versions of Double Dragon on NES. And, you know, Master System was more like the arcade version. But a lot of developers wouldn't even work on Sega systems. So Sega internally developed a lot of these conversions, games like Ys, Strider. I'm pretty sure Strider and Ghouls and Ghosts were programmed by Sonic Team, or what would become Sonic Team, and Yuji Naka worked on them. So even though those were, you know, other companies' games, Sega had to make them themselves. So, you know, considering the huge disadvantage they were coming into the 16-bit market from, it's kind of amazing they pulled off what they did, but they did. And a lot of that has to do with the U.S. marketing and the European marketing. And that was driven by Tom Kalinske, who I think recognized that the U.S. market wanted certain things and said, let's take this approach in America. Let's put a pack-in game in our system, which you never do in Japan, and let's make really rude advertisements that go after the competition, which you never do in Japan. Japan was like, that's not a good idea, but okay, we'll defer to you on this. And the result was Sega became huge in the West, where it never really found any traction in Japan. So this kind of ended up being Sega's undoing because it created this bitter rivalry between the US and Japanese sides. But for the 16-bit era, for the Genesis, Genesis was a big deal. It ended up catching up with the Nintendo market. And at one point, you know, Super NES and Genesis pretty much had a split on the market. It was 50-50, which, you know, that's a big difference from like 90% for NES and 10% shared among everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. When I was a little kid first getting into video games, it was just Nintendo. Like, the word was synonymous with video games. And then by the time the Super NES came out and I got one of those, like, I was well aware that there was another system out there that I had opinions about before I ever saw because of those ads.
Yeah, Jeremy's absolutely right that Nintendo had a 90%+ lock on the market when the Genesis came out, the Mega Drive. And in America, I'm talking about America. Mm-hmm. And after Sonic the Hedgehog, Genesis overtook Super NES sales for a season or so. And then eventually Nintendo came out with the Play It Loud thing as a counter to all that mature stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that that was really what did it for them. I think it was the games. They got Street Fighter 2 and they got Donkey Kong Country. So those were like, Super Metroid was awesome, but it wasn't. It did not sell like that.
Right.
It was Super Nintendo had Street Fighter 2 for a year.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, I remember that now.
I think it shows how equivalent they were that Biggie Smalls referenced both of them. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. You get a reference.
Point is right there.
Yeah,
I think the Genesis looks cool, by the way.
Does look cool.
I think it looks cooler than the Super Nintendo.
I only like the original model. I don't
Is
like
that the
model
circle.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I like.
And I only like it when it's stacked on top of a Model 1 Sega CD. When you do the side by side Sega CD thing, no. When you do this cool. Like the pure black Sega Genesis thing, no. You got to have like the weird sort of carryover. We want to be so high tech. Branding and graphics that they carried over from the Master System. Like, you remember Master System had that like printed grid of like the controller and power system, silk screen on the front. It didn't make any sense. It was pointless, but it looked cool.
It was cool, yeah.
And so Genesis was like, let's take that and make it even cooler in a more adult, sophisticated way. And it was.
And then
it said 16-bit right there on the top of the system.
And it has a headphone jack with a volume slider.
Yes.
In the first
and Genesis. That is... Yeah. a big part of why collecting and
does it even work? No one knows. They never used it.
Oh, it does. It does. This might if you be. Want to have stereo sound on your Genesis, you have to run it. If the Model 1, you have to run the sound through the headphone jack on the front because it only puts mono outputs mono from the back.
That makes sense.
So you have to get like a split cable that plugs into the front. My Genesis setup downstairs with the Model 1 Genesis and the 32X and the Model 1 Sega CD is a goddamn disaster. And it took me so long. I spent like a month trying to figure out exactly what kind of cables I had to use to make that work. And I wasted so much money thinking, well, this is going to do it, because there's not good information out there. There's all these different hardware configurations. There's three different models of Genesis. There's two different models of Sega CD. There's the 32X. Oh my God. I've played with all of them recently.
I was trying to reconfigure each one. I love the Model 1 Sega CD. It's almost like childlike in its experience of CD-ROM stuff. It just seems so old and slow.
With the cart or the tray that comes out.
But it's cool. It's really cool stacking it up like that.
This might sound weird. I think the NES looks like the original Enterprise. It's got that kind of military gray with the very low red surface detail. Yeah.
Everything is inside the Jeffries tubes.
Yes. The Super NES is like the Enterprise D.
It totally is. It's got purple.
The rounder lines. It's got the very late 80s, early 90s colors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like the colors on the console are the same as the conference room, the ready room chairs.
And the Genesis looks like Darth Vader. And I don't mean like, I mean that in a cool way.
With a red highlight. Yeah,
it's got the red and it's shiny and black. It looks like, you know, Darth Vader or the alien from Alien.
The Model 2 looks like Darth Vader. The Model 1, actually the Model 1 is like a New Hope Vader and Model 2 is like Empire Strikes Back Vader.
Yeah.
I love how the power base converter sits down exactly on the circle of the Genesis.
You should talk about what that is. What is the power base converter?
It's a device that lets you play Sega Master System games on the Genesis.
That was something Nintendo did not.
They totally did not.
The Super NES was designed to be backward compatible with the NES. They used an advanced version of the NES chip to power the hardware. They had plans. You were talking about this earlier before the podcast.
Yes, the controllers of the Super Nintendo are backwards compatible with the Nintendo and electronically. If you hook it up the right way to the NES, it'll work, and vice versa. So, what were we talking about
again? Just the fact that Nintendo was like, we're going to make it backward compatible. Sega did. We were talking about the power base converter. Sega did. They said, you know what? Yes. You 20 people who bought Master System games, you should be able to play even your stupid little card games,
the three
like
card
Transbot
games
in here, and Haunted Castle, not Haunted, like, what is it called? Ghost House.
Yeah, Ghost House.
Play these crappy little like low data games that you don't enjoy on the Sega Genesis. By God, we're giving you this option.
I thought that was awesome. I respect them for that. Yeah.
That as well, because there are like, you can go on YouTube and look up news stories, like television news stories about like Nintendo, like, oh, Nintendo's trying to make all your games obsolete. It's that planned obsolescence they could have fought by giving you the backward compatibility option
that was longer, built into the hardware.
How much longer would the NES lifespan have been if you could get one machine that could play both?
I mean, the NES lasted until 1994. It survived for 3 years after the Super NES came out. So it did pretty well for itself. But yeah, it probably would have lasted even longer. I mean, how long were they releasing DS games after 3DS came out?
A good bit. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think
there are still Wii games coming out. I think Just Dance for Wii is out this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Backward compatibility is amazing. I love it.
Yeah. There's a whole chapter of video game history that's weird about the successor consoles and what that means and what companies were going to do with that. Like Atari struggled with that so much, which is pretty much why they screwed up and failed. But the power base converter is really cool. It's just a neat option. And from what I have read in the past, I was actually rereading an article I wrote 10 years ago for the 20th anniversary of the Genesis.
God,
which is And it says, this is, I believe my old self, when I read that it, the hardware for the Sega Master System is essentially in the Genesis already. There's a Z80 in there.
It's like the system controller.
Yeah.
It's like the sound controller or something.
And there's the other stuff, the other bits and pieces you need. And the power base converter is essentially just a pass-through for the right cartridge slot and maybe some ROMs for the Sega Master System. And it was baked in there to begin with. The Master System is beating in the heart of the Genesis.
So what do you guys think is the coolest Sega hardware? I'm going to go first here, and I'm going to say the coolest Genesis hardware is the 32X. Not the 32X, sorry. The CDX. Yeah. So totally different. 32X is the worst. The CDX is amazing because it is a Discman that has a Genesis slot and also plays Sega CD games. It's everything all together, and then you can take it with you and listen to music.
And listen to CDs. I wanted one.
So good.
I wanted one just so I could have my own CD player. That's how barbaric this era was. Like, I also wanted the TurboGrafx CD player because, you know, you could actually use it as a CD player to listen to music, which just sounds so bonkers today. But at the time, that was, like, incredible. And my favorite, I always wanted the CDX, but I never got one. I still don't have one. My favorite is, well, let's just be contrarian and say the 32X.
Oh, come on.
I know Jeremy hates it.
You're just saying that. You don't even mean it.
It's only in retrospect. At the time, it was a terrible mistake. It has a library of like 10 games. I have no idea how many, 20. I don't know total. I have probably half of them. Three of them are kind of good. The Star Wars arcade port is good. The Knuckles Chaotix is kind of cool. And there's a football game that's not that bad. John Madden something. It's not Madden. It's can't remember what it is. But there's a great Virtua Racer port on there that's very fluid and very nice. And Doom is not that great for it. And anyway. But one of the other coolest pieces of hardware is the laser active Mega Pack thing. That I saw that in a Circuit City when I was a kid.
Yeah, okay, that's
kind of
rad. Oh, you've seen one in person.
Yeah, they had them at Circuit City. They had, so you could buy it's this Laserdisc player that you could buy an insert.
It was by Pioneer.
Pioneer, yeah. Thank you. You could buy a module that would insert into the Laserdisc player and let you play Mega Drive games, Genesis games. And they also had the option of a TurboGrafx plugin. You could plug in that, and it's like you could play two games on one thing. And then there were some Mega LD games, they call them, which were the Genesis that they were like souped up Sega CD games, but they used some analog video in the background, and they overlaid the digital stuff on top. And it's the most obscure format you could ever imagine.
It's so expensive now because it's never going to be emulated correctly.
Yeah.
It's hard to preserve laser discs. Man, it's... Yeah.
It's crazy.
That is a rabbit hole no one wants to go down.
And let's see. What else is there? There's a Nomad. I have a Nomad.
I was going to talk about the Nomad.
You want to talk about it? Okay.
Well, I mean, like, that's... Even if it's not great, it's a full gaming system that you can take with you. And it looks weird, but like it's weirdly asymmetrical, and
yeah, it is,
but it's pretty cool in like as an idea. Like, who didn't want that, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
that is the promise the Switch fulfilled.
Well, you know, NEC had done that with some turbo graphics like the GT and the LT, but definitely Sega like was the first to do it with a system that was extremely popular.
Yeah, I feel like the Nomad hit way too late. It was coming out in the 32X era, and when everyone was looking toward PlayStation and Saturn and stuff. But I thought it was so exciting. I got one used later, and the screen is not that great. The controls are kind of weird, and yes, it's sort of lopsided, asymmetrical design. But it has a second controller port, which is really cool, so you can play two-player. And I actually played it the most many, many years ago. I would take it to my brother's house and plug it in with a TV output to his TV. This is like a portable Genesis. It was just easy to move around, and he'd plug in a controller, and we'd play whatever game we had. And it was really cool, except that I do not have the battery pack that clips on the back. There's no way to put batteries into the base unit itself. You have to have a separate like big ass thing you clip onto.
Kind of like
it.
Virtual Boy.
Yeah, kind of.
Hmm. Although better.
I don't know. That's debatable. Virtual Boy is so cool. So bad.
Definitely.
If you like Retronauts, you're going to love the Collider Network on Podcast One. And now the Pop Culture Titan is adding more shows to its roster for you to enjoy, including Collider Live, Collider Sports, Collider TV Talk, Wrestling Sheet Radio, and so much more. Check out all the shows on the Collider Network every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
DC fans, you're going to want to check out the latest live-action series, Titans, available now on DC Universe. The series premiered on October 12th, and new episodes are available to stream every single Friday. It's the first original series to launch on DC Universe and follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes. There's Batman's former sidekick, Dick Grayson, also known as Robin. Raven, a guarded teenager who's starting to experience the emergence of supernatural powers that she doesn't yet understand. There's also Starfire and Beast Boy. These four characters become a surrogate family and team of heroes as they're caught up in a conspiracy to bring about hell on Earth. It's a gritty take on the Teen Titans franchise, from executive producer Akiva Goldsman, Jeff Johns, Greg Berlanti, Greg Walker, Sarah Schechter, and John Fawcett. It's a fresh new take on one of the most popular comic book teams ever, and it's available only on DC Universe. You can watch it on all your favorite devices for only $7.99 a month. That's 20% off a yearly membership. So join the ultimate DC membership at DCUniverse.com and keep up with the Titans. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand all for free. No credit card needed. No sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices today.
The all-new Toyota RAV4 asks, what if? What if your ride was refined and rugged at the same time? Introducing a car that's got style and substance to spare. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Featuring a sophisticated, muscular new exterior and available options like a premium JBL audio system and panoramic roof. The all-new RAV4 Limited. Toyota. Let's go places. JBL and Clarifier registered trademarks of Harman International Industries Incorporated.
This episode up, we were going to look at the launch lineups in different regions, and maybe that's something we'll do another time because we're kind of running short on time, as always seems to happen, you guys and your afternoon drives. So to wrap this instead, what we're going to do is let me give some context here. I feel like Sega is better than just about any other publisher at making its back catalog available. And those approaches aren't always the best. You have something like Sega Forever, which is kind of like, not great. You have those At Games mini Sega Genesis consoles, which are complete garbage.
Yeah.
But then you have, you know, Sega Ages, and you have the Ultimate Sega Genesis Collection or whatever it's called. And those tend to be good to great. So most recently, the Sega Genesis Collection, Sega Genesis Classics, came out this summer. And contained dozens and dozens of games, I think all of which are first-party published.
That was
like pretty much the entire first-party catalog of Sega Genesis.
Yeah, looking at this, I was shocked at how many first-party games there were. Which makes sense if Nintendo is like locking down the third-party developers.
Yeah.
But that they had that much output. is surprising and admirable.
Yeah, I mean, it had to happen because Nintendo had so much of a control over third parties. So it took a while for third parties to kind of move over to Genesis. That's why you had so much better representation of, you know, U.S. developers who hadn't published on NES before, like Naughty Dog. They got started on Genesis. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I asked everyone to look over the games that Sega considers canon by including them in Sega Genesis Classics and pick their top five games. The two games they want to dump, they think should not be allowed to be on this compilation or any compilation, and their black sheep pick. So, Chris, why don't we start with you? What are your top five?
My top five, the first and foremost one that I wanted to talk about is Comic Zone. Because this is a game that I desperately wanted when I was a kid.
What a surprise.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. The game where you basically play a side-scrolling brawler as Rob Liefeld, essentially.
Pretty much.
You're Sketch Turner, comic book artist, who is so cool that he is wearing sunglasses inside during a thunderstorm while drawing. But
are you really Rob Liefeld?
No, it's
because how can you do leg sweeps if your characters don't have feet?
Jeremy, okay. It's beneath you.
It is just like my feet are.
But the visual presentation of this game and the idea of staging a game as panels and moving through panels and moving across a page and then down and like literally opening up a way to a different panel and then just swinging around the border is super cool and super smart. And I know that like Sega ended up patenting that technology
Yes, which is why we never had anyone else do anything like that.
Yeah, which is weird.
Thank you, Sega.
Like, imagine how good Maximum Carnage would have been if you were doing that. And I like think Maximum Carnage is pretty good. Unfortunately, that game is ridiculously difficult. I've got past the first page once.
Comic Zone is insanely difficult. Even by Sega standards, which, you know, they're like, we're going to challenge you. Comic Zone is like, we are going to humiliate you. We're going to chasten you. We are going to emasculate you.
Yeah, it's way too unforgiving in terms of like the damage that you take. It takes way too long to beat up an enemy.
Yeah.
Like break a barrel. Mm-hmm.
Sketch Turner attacks like he's, I don't know, a comics drawer or something. Drawer.
One thing that bothered me about this is that I played through Comic Zone all the way to the end of the first page, and there's this pit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I fell in that pit three or four times, and I kept playing it. I got to see what's past this pit. And then I get past the pit. It's the end of the damn page.
Yeah.
And then you go on the next thing. But you die. It's game over. You have to start from the beginning if you fall in that pit.
If that game had lives, it would be 10 times better.
Yeah.
But it's such a cool...
It is a artistic masterpiece, first of all. This is one of my picks, too, so I'm going to talk about it at the same time as you. Because it is... This collection is, first of all, is really a stellar collection presented... Better than any other game collection I've played recently, as far as old emulated games, but this game, it has a depth to it that I didn't expect in the ways that it has this inventory system, and you interact with objects in the screen. It feels almost like a little mini adventure game in it because you use these certain things like a bomb or your rat buddy can go attack enemies, and you find him later and you can pick him up. Or there's other things like some kind of fist thing. I don't remember. And you can use these with the three secondary, the XYZ buttons. I don't know how you do it with a three-button controller. But
probably hold select.
Hold select, yeah. That's or start. Yeah, that makes sense. And this game is a masterpiece, and this is the game that I played the most out of this whole collection. I've played it over the years here and there, and I always think it's really cool. But it's criminally underrated, but it's also criminally difficult. And if it were just had a little bit more forgivingness to it, you could enjoy the whole game, not just the first page.
Yeah. Also, there's branching pathways based on whether you
go
like across the page or if you just drop down to a lower tier of panels. So many good ideas. I was literally like on GameFAQs being like, what's the infinite health code? Because I want to see the rest of this game, but it's impossible. I don't know, like, who has beaten Comic Zone out there?
I don't know.
But such a good idea, and I wish, like, that is the premise of an indie game from 2017. mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that is a...
Except it's been patented, so...
Yeah.
Actually, how long do patents last? Isn't it 20 years?
20 years.
Okay. So, it's right there for everyone. Go for it.
My next pick is another common one, Streets of Rage 3.
Three, yeah.
Hmm. I wrote down two, but I meant three.
Ah, okay.
I feel like the Streets of Rage games kind of get better as they go on, and like you get to do more stuff, like you get dashing attacks and everything. Better like roster of characters in Streets of Rage 3. In the way that the Final Fight games kind of get worse as they go on, I think Streets of Rage actually improves. I love Final Fight, and I think Streets of Rage is better.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's like an aesthetic thing, something. It's, do you get that?
They feel tighter and more fair. Yeah.
More fair.
And in one stage, you fight aliens, except it's just like actors on a back lot.
Dope. Hmm. I am a big side-scrolling brawler fan, which is good because I grew up with the Super NES, and that's 90% of games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Streets of Rage is just a really... It is the standard of that genre, which, you know, on Super NES, we had Final Fight. But I think this one kind of blows it out of the water. Except for it doesn't have Mike Hagar, who rules super hard. My third one, Wonder Boy and Monster World. Pretty self-explanatory on that one. I like the aesthetic is really good. The idea of getting the outlines of doors when you're in the buildings, I think it's just a very thoughtfully presented game. Mm-hmm. Golden Axe. Another side-scrolling brawler that I have really, really fond memories of.
Yeah.
You get to ride a dinosaur.
Yeah.
I can't think of another side-scrolling brawler where it was like, hey, here's a vehicle that you can just ride around in for a little bit. Except for Metal Slug. But that's not really a brawler.
That's not a brawler.
Yeah.
That's a lot later, too.
Yeah. But like, hopping on a dinosaur and like being able to knock people off and get knocked off, it adds such a frantic little thing to it. Again, a very hard game, but...
The Genesis version is a very good conversion of the arcade game. I don't think it has the three-player element to it, but I think everything else came through in a better way than, you know, the early Genesis arcade conversions were not good. Like, Altered Beast was good in as much as that game can be good, but like Thunderblade, Space Harrier 2, like, those were really rough.
Yeah.
You know, you think, hey, Sega made a console based on the same architecture as their hardware, their arcade hardware board. So it's going to be great, right? Well, no, that wasn't the case right away. So Golden Axe, I think, was important because it was, you know, finally them saying, hey, this is kind of more like what you expected from the Genesis.
Yeah.
Now, didn't some of those, we talked about on the arcade podcast that the Space Harrier, I don't know if it's Space Harrier, but Thunderblade, wasn't that a superscalar game that multiple 68,000 stacked up?
I think you're probably thinking of Galaxy Force 2, but yeah, I mean...
So that it had a lot more power in the arcade.
Yeah, the Genesis just could not scale sprites and backgrounds the way that the arcade boards could.
But I love Golden Axe. It was one of my favorite arcade games in that era. So your last one?
Gunstar Heroes, which we already talked about at length. Yeah. But super, like... Probably the most, on the entire collection, I think the most playable game, the most fun, with maybe the exception of the Sonic games. But just like frantic and pretty and well-designed and innovative, like a wild game.
Wait.
Okay, are we going to go through the tops?
What are Binge's top five picks? One of them we've already talked about, Comics Zone.
Yeah, Comics Zone. Another one is, I think my absolute favorite Genesis game these days is Toe Jam and Earl Panic on Funkotron.
So you like the second one better than the first?
Yeah,
that's not a common opinion.
What is not? I don't like it.
The reason I love this game so much is because about 10 years ago, one of my best friends and I started playing games over the internet on emulators where you could network them together and play two-player games. And we found this game, and we just stayed up all night playing it because it was so batshit crazy. It was so funky. It's like an acid trip the whole game. It's, you don't know what's coming up next. It's got weird sound effects and music and crazy graphics, and things are scaling. And you're it's a side-scrolling platformer, essentially, and I think you're rescuing
is
people.
Is it? I thought it was a top-down game.
No, the first one is a top-down game. That's why I don't like it that much. The second one is a platformer type style where you're capturing, like, people from Earth, I think, have come to Funkotron, this planet, and you're capturing them in jars. I think you're shooting jars at them to capture them, and then you're sort of rescuing them. And then every once in a while you go into hyperfunk zone, and everything goes all wavy and crazy, and you run through and collect things. And oh man, it's just a total trip, like the wildest, like diving into an abstract painting and playing it. So I have fond modern memories of that game. And another one on my list is Vector Man, which is one of the first games I rented for the Genesis. It's a very late era Genesis game. I bought a Genesis used from one of my friends in high school around 96, 97. And Vector Man, they were still renting games at Blockbuster, and I rented Vector Man. I was like, wow, this is cool. It has a lot of polish to it. It's very fluid and smooth. It has a high frame rate, good sound effects. It's the only problem is it's very difficult, and I couldn't get past the first few stages. But it's
a Sega approach.
Yeah, but it was still, it's a very good, very well-produced game. And another one is Shining Force, which I have not played since the late 90s, honestly. But I remember also, this is another thing I encountered on emulator in the late 90s when I was in high school, when the first Genesis emulators were out. I got Shining Force, and I played it for hours and hours and hours. I was surprised at how good it was. It's a strategy RPG where I think it's like a tactical, isn't it a tactical strategy RPG where you place your guys on a grid and attack? And I don't know what it is, but I really loved that game, but I really haven't played it since. And the last one I picked from this collection is Crackdown, which it's just like the modern Xbox 360. It's
exactly the same.
This is Crack Space Down.
Oh.
Crack Down. This is one we talked about on the arcade podcast.
Did
I think.
We?
Yeah.
That doesn't stick with me. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was on one of the Sega arcade things. It's the weirdest game. It's totally unlike anything else where you can play two players simultaneously, and you see different, there's different, the screen is divided into boxes. There's a box for you where you're seeing your top down view, sort of like Gauntlet. And then there's a box for your second player. And then there's a sort of mini map, I think, on the top, and some status bars on the top. And your goal is to navigate your way through an enemy complex and shoot the guys, and you can sidle up against the walls to avoid their bullets, which is really cool. And you plant bombs, dynamite in these certain spots, and then you exit the stage. And there's just something neat about it. This is one of those games that totally goes against the traditional Genesis formula in terms of just in your face blasting action and stuff. It seems a little bit more slow and intellectual. And I love the co-op element of it, and that you have independent views of what's going on the same screen. I mean, that's just so cool. So I love that game. And I think that covers all my picks.
Okay. So my own picks are kind of adjacent to you guys. Streets of Rage 1, I don't know why, but I like just the simplicity and purity of the first game over the second and third. I think the second game has the best soundtrack, but the first one is the one that I enjoy playing the most. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Three, you get to run. So yeah, it's a little faster paced.
There's also a guy with a skateboard, which I feel like...
Rollerblades.
Oh, is it rollerblades? Oh, well, that changes everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of Shining Force, but I like Shining in the Darkness, which is one of the first, maybe not the first dungeon RPG I played, but one of the first. And I didn't necessarily like it at first, but after getting addicted to Etrian Odyssey, I went back to play more of Shining in the Darkness and was like, okay, this is actually good. And I feel like it's one of those that once the Genesis collection comes to Switch, I'm going to have it in handheld form finally and play a lot of it.
It's a good game. It's a good game, yeah.
But in terms of RPGs, nothing on a Sega system comes close to Phantasy Star 4, which is a game I've never played all the way through, but just it takes the Phantasy Star concept and really perfects it. It is a top-tier console RPG from the 16-bit generation. It's not as flashy as Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger or something, but it's just solid. It's really good at through and through.
Yeah, there's something, there's a depth to it, a feel. I got that when it was relatively new.
So it was like $90?
No, wait, it wasn't new. No. It's, when I got a Genesis, I remember now, it was from Blockbuster. It was a previously viewed thing.
Okay.
But it was new to me.
Right.
I remember this.
New
but,
old.
Yeah, but it was, yeah, that's a great game.
None of you guys mentioned anything about Sonic, but I feel like this list would be remiss without some Sonic. And my pick is Sonic 2. I feel like it's the best Sonic game. The first one has a lot of good ideas, but it's kind of rough. And I think Sonic 3 is actually genuinely bad.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't good. Like playing Sonic 3 at all.
Me neither.
But Sonic 2, like, it nails everything just right. Yeah. It really, like, it's got the speed, and it doesn't feel as punishing. It has the second player element where someone can play as Tails, and it's got that asymmetry that you see in Nintendo games. The stage designs are interesting and fun. The music's great. It's got a biplane sometimes. Come on.
Yeah.
What's not to love about Sonic 2?
I am a notorious Sonic hater. And I feel like the Genesis games all have the problems that we've talked about. I will say that Sonic Mania is one of my favorite games of the year.
That game is not on Genesis.
No, it's not. But it's great.
Sonic 2 and Sonic CD are my two favorite Sonic games, I think. Well, of the old era.
All right. And finally, Beyond Oasis is a game that I need to play more of, but I love what I have played the first few hours of it. It's got that kind of Zelda thing, but it's more like a Lundra, actually. There's platforming. It's got a really great sort of Disney art style. Believe it or not, it was developed by Yuzo Koshiro's company, so it also has great music, in addition to the great graphics and solid gameplay. But it's pretty much Sega's answer to Zelda, and it's not as memorable or iconic as Zelda, but it's really good, really well made, and I love the look of it. So those are the essentials, but now it's time to talk about the dump it list, and I'll go ahead and start here. I feel like if you look at the Sega Genesis collection, the two games you could lose and not miss them would be Space Harrier 2 and Virtua Fighter 2, because the Genesis just had a hard time with those pure arcade conversions. Space Harrier 2 was technically not a conversion. It was an original game for Sega Genesis, but it was not good. It was not fun. Like, the scaling was kind of the point of it. It just feels very choppy and rough, and I don't know anyone who likes it. And if you think the Genesis had trouble with System 16 games, well, just wait till you get to Model 2 and Virtua Fighter 2, which it takes, you know, the pioneering, beautiful, cutting-edge 3D fighting game and turns it into a really ugly sprite-based fighter. I've heard Virtua Fighter was pretty good on 32X, according to you.
Yeah.
But not on Genesis. Just the raw 16-bit hardware? No, don't do that.
Actually, I was talking about Virtua Racer. I don't even know if Virtua Fighter was on 32X. I honestly don't know if it was.
Okay, well,
Virtua Racer is definitely on it.
Yes. Okay, well, in that case,
I don't know why they made Virtua
Fighter
2. Don't
play any Virtua Fighter before Saturn.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, go!
What's your dump it list?
Well, I had Virtua Fighter 2, but that's been taken. I can't get into Bonanza Brothers. I know people love that game or something. I think people
I like
love
that
it.
One.
But it's just too boring for me. How about a genuinely bad game like Alex Kidd and the whatever people in the place?
The Enchanted Castle? I think that's fair. I think Alex Kidd...
What a horrible game.
I think Alex Kidd games are pretty terrible.
The problem is I think they can't take it off because it's sort of iconic... early Sega platformer, you know, like a mascot. That was sort of one of their mascots in the Master System era, was it?
Yeah. So, he had several games on Master System, and they were okay, but this game is bad.
Also, I mean, the Super Thunderblade or whatever it is, Super Thunderblade is not very good. You know, that's another one of those things that doesn't translate well. And there's another shooter, I don't remember what it was, like a like a helicopter game or something.
That's Thunderblade.
Okay. Well, there's another one too. I don't remember. But those are, you know, a couple. Chris?
What would you dump?
I was playing this collection over the weekend, and I literally just went through it alphabetical order. And I started Decap Attack, and my wife looked up from what she was doing and looked at the television and said, "Turn this off. It is gross." And I agree. I also hate that it's like, it's that kind of humor, and I'm making air quotes, that's basically like somebody in an office somewhere who's like, "Kids are dumb. They'll like this." And like Decap Attack starring Chuck D. Head. I'm shaking my head. You can't see it, but
you're decapitated.
Bad.
What is Decap Attack about though?
It's about, you got a head in your body and you're like trying to, it's like a Frankenstein.
Is it like
thing?
The pro wrestling cover art?
Kind of.
Master System? You're holding your own head
in
a hammer
lock? Maybe that's what this was actually supposed to be the cover art to. It's a weird like horror game, but it's kind of like a comedy. It's like, what if Castlevania was a stupid comedy?
I disagree. I think this is a surrealist masterpiece on the level of Toe Jam and Earl's Funk Zone Funkatron.
Also not really Toe Jam and Earl.
Okay, actually it's not as good as Toe Jam and Earl, but it's just so weird today. I always saw Decap Attack in the store or somewhere and like, what the hell is that? I'm never playing this. So I never played it until this collection, and it's bizarre, but
I feel like it was made moot by Dynamite Heady.
It looks
it's like here's a much better game about heads. Skulls, but by treasure as opposed to Decap Attack.
Yeah. You have a skull for a little while you're playing it, and then it flies around the screen, and then you're shooting out of your stomach a face, like a brain
or something out of a mummy. It looks gross.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't like it.
But it has way more detail than I expected, graphically and stuff.
The other game, Jeremy, can I say the F word on this podcast?
Don't do it.
Okay. Heck, Kid Chameleon. Right. Kid Chameleon is trash. Kid Chameleon is, again, like this is what you kids like, right? Like, I hate it. Like, oh, man, these kids play video games just like you kids like video games, right? Here's a cool kid. I hate him. I hate it.
This game was really interesting to me because it's another one that I didn't really play until this collection. There's two things I found interesting about it. One is it has some momentum, like Super Mario Brothers. Obviously, you're also jumping on enemies and hitting blocks from beneath. It's like the most Super Mario Brothers-like game on the Genesis that I've seen so far, where it has that the mechanics of
momentum. What if Super Mario Brothers was made by the people who made Poochie on that episode of The Simpsons? That's exactly what it is.
Mm.
It's like, okay, jumping and hitting stuff.
Doesn't it have like 90 levels also? It's like just the game that never ends.
You would have to ask someone else who did not viscerally hate it on site.
How much would we have to pay you to play through all 90 levels of this game?
That would be a stream I think would be worth paying to
see. We'll work it out.
Yeah. The other thing,
everybody pledge like so many dollars per minute, and I'll sit down and do it.
I found Kid Chameleon charming. Just graphically, it's like Decap Attack. It's richer than I thought. It's sort of weird and funky, and it reminds me of a '90s shareware platformer on the PC, like Captain Comic or Commander Keen, where it's trying very hard to be like a Mario thing, but doesn't quite nail the mechanics of it.
Mm.
But it's funky and weird. So
yeah, I saw you made a little note on my list that says it reminds me of a shareware platformer, and I'm like, that's not like a strong recommendation.
Yeah, but it's just a charming thing. I mean, we're looking at this in retrospect now. I don't have to go back in time and make this a best selling title.
Yeah, you're not paying $50 for it now.
Yeah,
that's true. But
that's
like
different. Yeah.
I didn't realize until I started talking about both that, like, I find both of these to be games that feel like they're insulting the audience's intelligence. Like,
I didn't say it that way. I don't know why. But you can get different uniforms and stuff in Kid Chameleon. That's why you're a chameleon. You can be, like, a night guy.
I get the premise of the game, Bench.
You can change like a chameleon.
Trash.
So, like, Mario's suits in Mario 3.
Kind of.
What if Mario 3 was just bad?
Yeah. What if Super Mario Bros. 3 was
terrible?
I played
a lot of games like that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bench, did we do yours?
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
okay. We did. I think it's time to wrap by talking about the Black Sheep games. Is there a game on here that you feel, hey, people need to appreciate this more? This is a game that does not get enough respect, enough props.
Well, I found one that I had never really played before that I was surprised by, which is Biohazard Battle. It's a shooter, sort of a space shooter, but I think you're in a body or something, or it's biological based theme. And there's something about it, just the presentation, the graphics were unexpectedly cool and interesting, and the music was incredibly trippy and funky. Although it started sort of
you
giving
keep
me
saying funk.
Funk. It's the
I do not think you know what this word
funk
means.
Zone. Yeah, it's something about it. It gave me motion sickness after a little while, which I've never had in my life.
Okay.
But, you know, it just was delightfully surprising, I think. You know, but the other one, I mean, the most underrated game in here is Panic on Funkotron. I think that's my real black sheep title.
Okay. I'm going to stump for Fatal Labyrinth, which I noticed in the notes originally you put under your dump it list.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a different game. I remember I've played Fatal Labyrinth before, and then I played again. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is the roguelike where they tried to do Rogue on the Genesis,
right,
which is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I
feel like, okay, it's
I disavow that.
It's a bit of a shallow game now.
Yeah.
Sure. But this was, they were breaking new ground. Basically, Fatal Labyrinth was a game for the Sega Channel, and they had, it was an original creation. So they had, you know, like a very limited storage space, very, you know, data transmission space. So they tried to make a compact game that would offer a sort of dynamic, changing experience. So they looked a Rogue and created a, you know, procedurally generated RPG that follows a lot of roguelike rules. And it's a simplistic take on the Rogue genre, but I think it's a pretty solid one. And I appreciate the fact that the Sega Genesis collection has save states, because it does have that Rogue thing where all of a sudden you're surrounded by bad guys and 30 floors in, oh, you're dead. Start over. Yeah. I like being able to cheat just a little bit. It's okay. I play Mystery Dungeon the fair way. I can play this game by cheating. But I think it's a really strong historical artifact that predates, as far as I know, any other console roguelike ever. So it's kind of a big deal in its tiny way.
I think you're right. It takes a slice of PC gaming history and puts it in an unexpected place. Mm-hmm.
And it was a digital download game
that
eventually elevated to physical status. Because the first time I ever saw it was at a rental shop, and I was like, huh, this description sounds interesting. The dungeon's never the same way twice.
I think I have this cartridge, and that's why I played it before. But I was, you know, there's so many weird little obscure RPGs I was thinking it was a different
game. I got it confused for a long time with Fatal Rewind, which is very different. That's like a Psygnosis game, kind of action-y. So I had trouble for years trying to figure out what this enticing looking game was that I saw at a rental shop, but it was not Fatal Rewind. It was Fatal Labyrinth. And I finally got to play it on this collection and was like, oh, this is the one, this is it.
Yeah. There's one more game I was surprised by that I had never played before. I think is Light Crusader, which I did not have the time to get very far in this because I was rushing to come to this podcast, but It's neat. It looks really cool. It's an isometric action RPG with a map. And I mean, it looks really cool. Like, man, I would have loved this game if I knew about it when it was new. So there's so much to discover for Nintendo kids like me who grew up with Nintendo and Atari and stuff. And in this deep back catalog, I mean, there's incredible stuff on the Genesis.
Yeah, Fatal Labyrinth is exactly the kind of game that I'm like, I wish I had known about this sooner. This would have changed my perspective on things.
And Beyond Oasis is another one for me, too.
So I'm really grateful that Sega is so good about putting its back catalog on systems. And I love when M2 does their Sega Ages type things where they like reinvent stuff while also keeping it very faithful to the original. But I'm also okay with things like, you know, the Genesis collection where it's just like, here's a bunch of games.
Yeah. And it's so well done. It's just a great, great presentation and everything.
For my black sheep, I think the Wonder Boy games could use another look. I think those are good. Vector Man was another one that it looks like 1994 to me in a very kind of appealing way, and I feel like that's an interesting thing. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Shadow Dancer, The Secret of Shinobi.
Go for it.
Which is not a good game. It's a perfectly average side-scrolling action game, like a Ninja Gaiden kind of clone, except you have a cool dog, and if you hold down the attack button, your dog will go and fight people for you. And I think that is a mechanic that is great, and I think more games should have cool dogs that are your sidekicks.
I agree.
It's not just for Stardew Valley anymore.
All right, so any final thoughts on Sega Genesis here on its 30th anniversary?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I
this
think
is your final thought. This is the last thing you will ever say about Sega Genesis. Ever say.
Okay, I'll give you a cool tip. If you love Sega Genesis and you have a Sega CD, I think it has no copy protection. So if you download a bunch of Sega CD ROMs, you can burn them onto CDs and play the heck out of them.
That's your piracy tip for the day.
Stop all the downloading.
Stop. Hey, kid, I'm a computer.
That was the other episode.
No. I still have mixed feelings about the Genesis in general, and I honestly have a lot of mixed feelings about the collection. I think there's a lot of stuff that's in there for its historical value, but there are some like really interesting and fun games in there. And Gunstar Heroes I'm glad that Gunstar Heroes is well known now as a classic of the era, because it's so good. And if that had been a Super Nintendo game, people would have been losing their minds over it for like 20 years.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it had been on Super NES, boy, Nintendo would be the one republishing it.
Yeah.
That's true. We'd have a Nintendo game.
We'd have so many Gunstar Heroes chibi versions on various handheld systems.
It'd be Gunstar Amiibos.
Gunstar Amiibo is a great name for a game. Somebody get on that, please. Yeah.
All right.
My wife is shouting at me over the phone to come.
Well, it's time for everyone to go home then. So that wraps it up for this episode of Retronauts. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for writing in and balancing our poorly informed opinions about Sega Genesis with your expert experience. Guys, where are you on the internet these days?
I am Benj Edwards. Right now I am building cool Genesis joysticks called the BX95 and a BX100 six-button stick that I've made like 5 or 6 BX95s and only one BX100 for Jeremy, and which he hasn't claimed yet. But
I only got so much money.
Yeah, it's fine. He got some
handcrafted, artisanal joysticks.
Free-range, slow batch, small batch joysticks. Anyway, you can watch my handcrafted joystick exploits on Twitter at Benj Edwards and also vintagecomputing.com. And Chris?
You can find everything that I do at the-isb.com. That's my homepage. I do a bunch of other podcasts that are all linked there. If it is late October, I have some comic books that are out. The Army of Darkness 2018 Halloween special. I wrote the lead story in that with my writing partner, Chad Bowers. We also have a new miniseries coming out starring Sleepwalker, a relatively obscure Marvel hero who we are bringing back. If you want to know what it looks like inside all the Infinity Stones, then read Infinity War Sleepwalker, because it's exciting. Super fun. Todd Knox doing the art for that. Owen Marin is doing the art for the Army of Darkness comic, which takes place in Charleston, South Carolina. So get those, and thank you.
And finally, I'm Jeremy Parrish. You can find me here at Retronauts, which you can find on... where can you find it? Retronauts.com, the iTunes podcast download service, and other similar services, and Podcast One, who give us money for the ads that you had to listen to. If you don't want to listen to the ads, here's a secret. You can go to patreon.com/retronauts, pay $3 a month, and you get podcasts a week early at a higher audio band bit rate without advertisements. So that's a small trade-off. Either way, it helps me make a living, so we're grateful. In any case, thanks for listening. This has been a 30th anniversary tribute of sorts to the Sega Genesis. Keep playing Sega Genesis games on such platforms as Nintendo Switch and other classic consoles that are not classic. They're new. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. It's been a long day. I'm going to go now. Sega Genesis is cool. Good night.
This brown bag lunch, this staycation, this do-it-yourself oil change, this second shift at work,
At American Family Insurance, we understand what it takes to make your first home a reality. It's the same as it takes to protect it. For home, auto, life, and business. Visit AmFam.com to learn more. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance.
American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.